This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour number three. We roll along this morning. Good Wednesday to you. The Chargers are the team we're focusing on today as we continue to look at the AFC West. Shannon Farron is going to join us from KFI 640 in Los Angeles, co-host of Gary and Shannon. She's also the Chargers sideline reporter to talk about this team that I think a lot of people have their eyes on. A lot of team looking at, like, when you talk about the hierarchy of the AFC, the Chiefs, the Bills, the maybe the Titans are kind of on that upper echelon based on what they did last year. But when you talk about the large group of teams that should be in position to make a playoff, the Chargers are on that list. They've got a young superstar quarterback. They've got a smart head coach. They've got good players on both sides of the ball. But in the end, it's a tough division. We've been saying that all week because it is. That's the way it is. So we'll get to the Chargers coming up this hour. By the way, last night, many people were waiting to see it. Many people were anticipating seeing it, but it didn't come to fruition. Could it come at some point in the next 2 days? And that is Timmy Trumpet, who did not perform last night as the Dodgers beat the Mets at Citi Field to open up that series. Remember, he was going to play live the Diaz intro song for him coming into the game, but they did not use him last night, so he did not play. Nevertheless, the Dodgers and Mets will play two more games. He says he'll be around to try to play it again. We shall see. Division leaders battling it out at Citi Field. The Dodgers are red hot, absolutely red hot. I don't know if there's any cooling off that they have. I don't think so. They don't look like they are going to be slowing down. They never had that lull, right? I mean, you would know better than me. They never had that lull during the season like the Yankees did, where people were going, what the heck's wrong here? What's the matter with this team?
They just have pitching woes.
A little bit of that, yeah.
Everyone seems to be going on the IL the right time of the year.
That's right. That is true. But they beat the Mets yesterday, so we'll see how this series goes. No offense to the Dodgers, but I kind of want to see Timmy Trumpet play for Edwin Diaz.
Listen, I said this a while ago. So, as a diehard Dodger fan, I don't want to see it because I know what it means. As a baseball fan, God, am I hoping it happens.
Yeah, I think it'll be kind of exciting. We'll have that next.
The way I figure it, it's just one game.
All right, we'll talk some Chargers football coming up. Also, college football tomorrow night. Big night for college football as it opens up the week one season. I'm sorry, week zero teams. I don't know what to do with you. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, so this is your day today. This is the Chargers, baby. We're doing the Chargers today. Give me your idea. Give me your feeling of the season. Give me your, like, are you nervously good? Is it nervousness anyway?
No, like? I'm nervous because
you should make the playoffs.
If the Chargers were in the AFC South, NFC North, I would just be sitting back with my feet up, cocktail in hand, saying, bring the playoffs on.
Right.
Right? I'm nervous because I know the road that's ahead of us. I mean, you got the Chiefs, the Raiders. We talked about them yesterday, although I disagree with a lot of points.
Exponentially better than last year.
Hondo had to say yesterday. He did make some that I was constantly forgetting, like that Crosby guy.
Yeah, Max Crosby, right. Yeah, come on.
Constantly forget about him. Watching the game, I don't know if it was the first Raiders-Chargers game or the second Raiders-Chargers game, which I try to block out of my memory. He was all over us last year. So, yeah, that makes me nervous. I am optimistic, though, but it's also this this excitement because I just hope that this offense can live up to the hype that's being built around it. Because, obviously, what's being said about it? The best offense in the league.
Oh, there's no question. And here's the thing. Have you ever seen more optimism for a 9-8 football team than the Chargers have coming into this season?
9-8.
Right. I mean, seriously, that is a 500 football team.
It really was.
And
it really was.
Everyone, like me, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not standing behind laughing at everybody. I'm right in there with you.
I'll go through the list, right, of games that they're going to play, do the wins and loss things, because we all do that with
our team.
God, I've landed 13-4, 14-3. I mean, why not?
Right? Exactly. Exactly. So, I am very optimistic for this football team because I like Justin Herbert. I think he's going to be a mega star in this league. You got to get to the playoffs to kind of cross the Rubicon, if you will, into stardom. You've got to get to the playoffs. You got to do some things in the playoffs. That's the way it works. But nevertheless, there's so much upside to this, to what they bring. But they have got to find a way to win games they should win. But, you know, like their losses last year, some of them, I mean, most of them were against, I mean, losing to the Texans was probably ridiculous. But when I was going over this last night in the preview, right, they lost to Dallas. That's a playoff team. They lost to New England, who made the playoffs. They lost to Las Vegas, who made the playoffs. They lost to Kansas City, obviously, who made the playoffs. But, you know, you gotta win the games you're supposed to win. You got to beat the Texans. You know, like if they beat the Texans, there's no conversation about them fighting the woeful Steelers for the final playoff spot in the AFC. But because the Steelers had that tie instead of a loss to Detroit, that's where they ended up because they had the tiebreaker. But I remember I was at my parents' house for Thanksgiving, and it was right around that time with the Steelers and the Chargers. And I remember watching that game, and I loved the Chargers. I just loved watching them play. I was nervous because the Steelers were trying to keep up with them in a game that it was going back and forth. You know, the Steelers were making a comeback. But I thought, this is a very good team. But they stumbled. They lost 3 of 4 down the stretch, and they didn't make it. But there's a lot to like about them. That being said, again, I worry about can a really good team, like on just – Not in terms of record. I mean, like, where you watch them and you go, my God, that's a really good team. Could they be a victim of their own conference? Could they be a victim of their own division, right? Both of those things being the AFC and the AFC West, meaning the Chargers could just stumble in a game or two here against some good teams are being put together in the division, good teams are being put together in the conference, and it's just enough to keep them out again. I don't know yet if they've crossed, if they're able to get where they can push some of the teams that will be competing, like in Indianapolis with Matt Ryan, for example. I don't know about Tennessee. I still question about the Titans a little bit, but the Patriots, I'm not 100% sure the Patriots are going to be, you know, in one of the better teams in the league, like those teams, Miami, New England, Indianapolis, a couple of teams. I'm thinking like maybe Baltimore, maybe the Browns, if Deshaun Watson helps them win some games late in the season. I think they're better than all those teams. I don't know who's going to win the division. The Chiefs are my favorite to win the division, but I think the Chargers are going to be better than 9-8, and they're going to be right there in the mix for the playoffs if not going to the playoffs.
Yeah, that division
is dangerous.
The only thing I fear with that division is that they're really going to hurt each other.
Yeah, that's right.
Just in terms of playoff seeding, not physically, just in terms of playoff seeding, because I can see the Dodgers splitting with the Raiders. I can see them splitting with the Chiefs. I can see the Chiefs splitting with the Raiders. I mean, in a small way, although I think outside the realm of it, just because I'm still uncertain about the team, I can see all four of those teams splitting with each other.
Yeah, and here's the thing.
I don't give a whole lot of hope in the Broncos just yet.
Ask the Giants. Remember the years the Giants went to the Super Bowl. They were way better than their record indicated, but they were getting they were involved in these divisional games that made it look like, hey, everybody's beating up each other. But in the end, when push came to shove, they were a better team than the division actually showed. There's been plenty of examples like that. The NFC North was like that for a while. You'd have the years where Andy Dalton was quarterback and Carson Palmer was the quarterback of the Bengals, where the Bengals would make the playoffs. You'd have them with Baltimore and the Steelers. Browns were always a kick around team anyway, but you would feel like, no, these teams are actually better than their record. They're all fighting for wins, but they're fighting against each other. That's what could happen in the West here. What's interesting is that That could be a problem for everybody in that division, right? The Kansas City Chiefs, let's just take them. They could be theoretically the best team in the conference just by the way they're looking, right? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Don't know yet. But let's just say they are. But the record within their record might keep them from home field advantage in the playoffs, even though you know, God, Chiefs are good, but they're just getting into these constantly good battles. They're going to have six games on their schedule immediately against playoff-level opponents within their division. There's no one in that division that's an easy, hey, we should take care of them. They've beaten the Broncos. The Chiefs have beaten the Broncos like 15 straight times. I mean, it's nuts. Something along those lines, right? They haven't beaten them. Well, maybe that's too much. I think it was like 10 times because whenever Peyton Manning left, they've won almost every game against Denver since. There's not going to be a Denver to kick around anymore. Like, Russell Wilson and the Broncos should be good. Chargers are good. Raiders are good. So, but defensively, those defensive backs the Chargers have that's a great thing to have when people can't chuck it around on you.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Lots to like.
But right? That's the thing. I mean, you know, it's like I said, that division is a blessing and a curse because they could all four teams could just beat each other up and make them no good for the playoffs, or it's getting them playoff ready early on in the season, and then they're just on full thrusters for, you know, that no one can catch up to.
Right.
I don't really know how it's going to go. But, yeah, I am optimistic about this team. I am so curious about this offense.
All right, so there's one question I do have, and this is one of those big picture questions, which is how tough has it been for L.A. to still look at this team as one of their own? Is it still hard to do it? Is it still... whoever they play is going to be the de facto home team for people who get to buy tickets.
Is it
going
to be Allegiant Field South or Allegiant Field West?
Right, right.
Allegiant Stadium, whatever it's called.
It made their pursuit more difficult when the Rams won the Super Bowl, right? Because if you're in Los Angeles and you haven't already attached yourself to the Raiders and you haven't and you're looking in the city, the Rams have a deeper history than the Chargers. The Chargers still feel like they're out of place. Like we talked about this yesterday with the Raiders. Didn't it feel like it's a seamless transition from Oakland to Las Vegas? Right. It felt like this, that, yeah, of course. Why, you know, you're the Oakland Raiders. That's all the history, the Raiders, all of that. But if you're going to move, it seems like Las Vegas has embraced the Raiders, loved the Raiders. I'm glad they're in our city, glad they're here. I lived in Vegas for 3 years in the 90s, early 2000s. We were a Raider affiliate. We knew the Raiders had popularity in the city.
That's, I think, the big difference. Because there's the Raiders, here's the deal. The Raiders could have moved anywhere, honestly.
Yeah, they could have.
They could have moved anywhere, and a fan base would be there.
There was a talk about them moving to Carson.
San Antonio?
San Antonio. They were going to move to, what was it, Carson?
Carson City?
Yeah, was that?
Nevada?
No. The one in California.
Oh, Carson,
they were
gonna California, yeah.
They were going to do that thing where they were going to build that stadium. And they were going to have
two division rivals share
the
stadium.
Right. There was all of that, right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they would have a huge fan base in L.A. They've been there for years. I mean, there's still a huge fan base in L.A. They have a huge fan base. You know, that's why I said, I mean, this team could move to Portland and it would be selling out stadiums. They could move in with the Seahawks, and the Raiders would probably outdraw the Seahawks this season.
Right.
But yeah, you're absolutely right, because when the Raiders moved, there was a gamble. They were taking a chance to move into Vegas. We don't even think twice about it. We do think twice about the Rams still.
Sure.
And they got a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And we're always going to think twice about the Chargers just because, first of all, it's not their building. And second of all, there really wasn't a fan base for them to move to. Their fan base, they left.
Yeah.
And I feel bad. It's like they need to go back to that fan base.
I just can't. Listen, I'm not going to pretend I know all these deep economics, political issues that go on. I follow it when there's a stadium ordinance that are up. But I also know that sometimes teams want out. So, teams, no matter what the city offers them, they're looking at greener pastures somewhere else. You raise the level of your franchise. I get it. I get it. But to me, I don't like when teams move. I'm like everybody else. I don't like it when they move. I don't like when the Colts moved in the middle of the night, etc. There are some cases where I'll say, yeah, you know what? Move them. I don't care. You don't deserve them. I still look at Tampa Bay and the Rays. I go, I have no idea how you continue to support a baseball team like that. Then nobody goes.
No.
Nobody goes when they're in the playoffs. I'm sorry. If the Tampa Bay Rays moved to Nashville tomorrow, I wouldn't shed a tear for the people of St. Petersburg. And my wife's from St. Petersburg. You've had 20 years to figure this out, and you can't do it. But the Chargers moving to Los Angeles, a city that rejected them the second they got there, I wouldn't. Other than the value of the franchise going up, I still couldn't believe they couldn't work something out to keep him there. I know the city tried, and they came to blows, and I know all the political stuff that happened. But it was hard to take, not from the standpoint of San Diego, but it just felt like you're not moving to an embracing city. All these cities will go come in. I'm telling you, the first Major League Baseball team that wants to go to Nashville, this city will line up to kiss its derriere like you wouldn't believe. I'm not kidding. Any owner that wants to move to Nashville with the Major League Baseball team, every single country star will do whatever it takes to get that team here. They talk about it all the time here. Los Angeles turned to the Chargers and said, "We don't even want you. Go away.
Yeah.
We're not coming. Play in that stupid soccer stadium. We're not coming."
And at this point, you know, maybe they should still play in that soccer stadium because, yeah. I mean, at least 30,000 of their own players will.
And this team is really good. This team is good. They should make a run. They are loaded. J.C. Jackson and Asante Samuel and defensive backs are great. This is going to be great. But, again, it's the larger picture. You know, can they be embraced? You living in Houston, I know it hurts that they're not in San Diego, but, you know, at least you're not in San Diego as a season ticket holder going, "I wish my team was still around." But at the same time, you got a good football team. That's a good football team that should make the playoffs.
And a lot to be excited for.
All right, we'll come back. It's Wake Up Call again. Shannon Farron will join us. We'll talk to her about the Chargers. She's their sideline reporter, also at KFI 640 in Los Angeles, to get the details on that. And we'll continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, back to one of the top stories of the morning. John Gruden apologizing, or at least semi-apologizing, during a meeting speaking at the Touchdown Club in Little Rock to support Arkansas football. Gruden said that he did not like the, you know, was that's not him. That's not, he's not that kind of person. He goes to church. He's been married 31 years. He's sorry for the way these emails came about. Will he get another chance in the NFL? Earlier this morning, we kind of were speculating on this a little bit, saying, hey, you know what? I just think that his lawsuit against the NFL, he's just right now too poisonous for any NFL team to get him. Now, does he want a college job? Even in college, I think it's going to be really difficult for a school to jump on board the old John Gruden train. But it doesn't mean he can't get something somewhere in a coordinator capacity. It's whether or not he wants to do that. He loves football, but you know what? He had 10 years where he was a highly paid personality on television, where he had many, many, many opportunities to get out of that and get back into coaching. So for 10 years, he was playing the John Gruden game, which is everybody buzzing about John Gruden. And in the end, he wasn't pulling the trigger on anything until he did agree to become the head coach of the Oakland Raiders for the second time. Started in Oakland as a young guy, went to Tampa Bay, won a Super Bowl, left the Buccaneers, was no longer with the Buccaneers, and then went into football broadcasting, did that for like a decade, and then he got back into coaching. And then he resigned, but he said forcefully resigned from his job, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's technically a firing, but he resigned. But the emails that he's talking about, and I said this earlier, I think there is one thing about it that I will agree with him on, that it did seem like he was being singled out in a way. There was nothing else that was brought up by anybody else in that investigation. We didn't get to see the details of anything else, and the NFL was willing publicly. They could have kept everything silent. Remember, we weren't privy to this as a public. Right. This was a investigation by the league. They owed it. They owed us nothing. Right. They were doing their own investigation into the Washington franchise and the workplace conditions. Remember, this goes back to the summer of 2000. Remember the summer of 2000, the Washington Post was going to have a blockbuster story. Everybody was buzzing about it. It was like July of 2020, where everybody was wondering what was going to be happening. And they said this is a bombshell report, and nobody knew it. Was Dan Snyder getting kicked out of the league? It was kind of like this large speculation as to what was going to happen to the Washington football team. Well, then it was a report of workplace conditions, especially with female employees, and exactly the sexual harassment that was going on within the workplace. So the Washington Post was doing this investigation. So the league decided to do an investigation. And in the process, they were able to get these all of these emails and look through them. Now, remember, this is their own personal investigation. So it wasn't public. We didn't have a right to it. It was their own investigation. So Gruden is suing them for why in the world did my emails become public? Why in the world did my situation, why was I dragged into this? In the end, why were you releasing those emails? And it sort of put him in a position where his name is ruined. He can't coach. He's not going to be landing on his feet anytime soon. When you hear John Gruden as a coordinator for somewhere around the country, it is going to be years from now, but it's not happening tomorrow. No matter what his agent is doing working the phones, it is not happening tomorrow. And he has a point in a way. He has a point, right? So the NFL had these emails since June of 2021, and it wasn't until the middle of the season in 2021 that all of a sudden, somehow, some way, the New York Times gets a hold of this. And Gruden's emails are now public, and Gruden is answering for it. Now, he used despicable language. There's no question about that. And I'm not excusing that whatsoever. But I think he does have a point. There were 650,000 emails that were in that investigation. Why was his the only one public? That's a good question. Especially when, again, go back to the summer of 2020, when the Washington Post was teasing a big blockbuster story on the Washington franchise. Well, if you're the NFL, there's probably a lot of these emails you don't want to get out at all. So you're doing your own private investigation and you'll deal with it privately. But if you want to deflect, if you want to show, put somebody else on the sacrificial altar for this investigation of what was going on with Washington, John Gruden seemed like a very good target based on these emails. Now, this is not to excuse the emails, right? I mean, this is some awful stuff. He, again, I said this earlier, he did not understand the technology he was using, right? Maybe he should have wrote these down on paper that Bruce Allen could have burnt in the fireplace, right? By the way, that is actually becoming that's going to end up becoming a very lost art, by the way. You know, you see this where like some government official in a movie, like, and we won't be seeing this anytime soon. And they turn around, they throw it in the fireplace. Now you just got to keep an email on a server for the rest of its life. John Gruden didn't understand that emails are saved and saved and saved and saved, and you can just get them anytime. Same thing with text messages, right? So because of that, because of his language that he used, it was an easy target. That was a layup for the NFL. That was easy. Get the New York Times to publish these things and everyone will target John Gruden. Meanwhile, we'll not let anybody know what the heck is going on in these other emails. I don't think Gruden's apology, and again, I prefaced this in hour one by saying, I don't know if that was the right place to do that, right? Like there's always a place to do an apology. You do something like that, you should apologize. And he did. But when he was speaking, it was about Arkansas football. It's not really about the John Gruden story. He's there as a celebrity. He's there speaking. He's not there to do the mea culpa. He's not in front of that group to apologize and make this about that. He did use that opportunity to do it. But if he really wants to apologize, he's going to have to find a venue to do that in. Probably not with ESPN, who's probably doesn't want anything to do with, but he probably does need to find a media outlet that will allow him to sit down, maybe call Fox, maybe call CBS, maybe make it part of the pregame show where he actually sits down with Jay Glazer or somebody else and really, really apologizes. That is more of a booster thing. It's in a booster event. They want to feel good about Arkansas football. They're playing Cincinnati coming up this weekend. There's a lot of things to like about Arkansas. He was there to promote that. Apology was there, but I don't think it was from the heart because it certainly didn't really sound like it.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go back out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote today at progressive.com. We've been focusing on teams in the AFC West this week, and the Los Angeles Chargers are on the clock for us. Shannon Farron joins us, KFI 640 Chargers sideline reporter. Again, 9-8 last season, but boy, what a heartbreaking finish to their season in that game in which a tie would get them in, and almost got that in the final game against Las Vegas. Shannon, how are you?
Oh my gosh, don't bring up that game. I'm getting mad just thinking about it, and I just woke up.
We have been buzzing about this team, and I can't think of a 9-8 team that I am more excited about in the second year than the Chargers. I've never seen a team like that is built so well. But let's go back to that season. There are things you learn about your team. There's things you know you need to get better at. They came so close, but what was the 2021 takeaway?
You know, we were in New Orleans last week. It was just a few days ago, actually. And they put that up on the Jumbotron. 9-8 in the 2021 season. And I think everyone's blood was boiling on that sideline just looking at that 9-8. Because this team is so much better than that.
Without question.
Like you mentioned, that's exactly what Brandon Staley did. He had to sit in that. They all had to sit in that. They had to sit in that loss at Las Vegas where they just had to tie the game to make it into the playoffs. Went for it on fourth down on their own 18. All the analytics say that was exactly the right call. However, it left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. And the Raiders went on to score the field goal and advance, and the Chargers went home. But Brand Staley sat in it. And what he sat in was that very leaky defense. He doesn't blame the offense for that game. He doesn't blame the fact that he went for it on fourth down. He doesn't blame any of that. He blames that leaky run defense in that game specifically. So what did they do? They went out and they got guys. They got Khalil Mack. Sure, he missed 10 games last season with that foot injury, but he's Khalil Mack. Brandon Staley has wanted him since forever. He has always wanted Khalil Mack, and that is what he got on the other edge. When you look at what Joey Bosa was able to do with Melvin Ingram on the opposite end of that line, he was unstoppable. Melvin Ingram goes away, and Joey can't do as much as he usually does. Well, now he's got help. And that's going to be huge for the secondary, right? More pressure on the quarterback. Secondary is able to do more. That's why they brought in J.C. Jackson from the Patriots.
With Brandon Staley, I always say this is sort of a catch-22 with guys who like going for it on fourth down to take an aggressive approach. It's like a catch-22. Fans love it until it doesn't work, and then they criticize it when it doesn't work, and then you get conservative, and they wonder where the aggressiveness is gone. How has he balanced that when things do work on those times where he's aggressive, and when they don't work, which is inevitably going to happen?
I believe they worked 65% of the time last season when he went for it on fourth down. And if you talk to analytics guys around the league, they love Brandon Staley. Yeah. I mean, leave the fans out of it, right? We don't know, right? We don't know what the hell we're talking about. But the analytics guys, they love him. They say that Brandon Staley is their Trojan horse, that this is the guy who's going in, he's taking all the heat for it, but they love it because they want to do it too. Everyone wants to do it, but they just don't want to take the heat for it. So they're seeing how this is all going to work out. And better believe that he will double down on that this season. I mean, when he was called out last season, he stood firm in his decisions to go for it on fourth down.
How close is Justin Herbert from being a megastar in this league? You kind of got to get to the playoffs. We kind of put that on these quarterbacks. But he's got everything that you'd want for that status. How close is he to that status?
Man, listen, this is insane. He is in his third year. You talk to all the greats. You talk to the legends. They say that there is a huge jump for quarterbacks in their third year. That the game just slows down. And he is routinely staying late at practice, 90 minutes. If he misses a couple passes, a couple throws in practice, he will run that route forever. after. As Keenan Allen said, Philip Rivers never stayed late. Justin Herbert routinely stays late. He spent the offseason cleaning up his footwork, incorporating more the mental side of the game. He's developing a stronger variance when he uses his cadence during the pre-snap. Remember, he's got Corey Linsley there, spent 7 years in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. Together, their communication routinely got defenders to jump offsides, and they've been working on that aspect. But listen, I don't even know how much of a jump you can make. This is a guy who won all the awards. And I was just looking at this play in Cincinnati. They're on the 4-yard line. It's a fourth down. And Justin Herbert takes 2.5 seconds to slam it into a window, a small baby window to Keenan Allen. This was after they took away the Cincinnati D took away his first three options. They took away Mike Williams at the post. They took away Austin Eckler in the flat. They took away his tight end. And it's 2.5 seconds? Going through all those progressions, I mean, he is unstoppable, and he loves it. He said, you know what, I didn't take a vacation in the offseason. Practice is my vacation. I mean, that should terrify everyone in the AFC West, what they're calling the division of death, rightly so.
Absolutely. And this team is the offensive line. How big of importance is that to allow him to do those kind of things? Will it look the same? Are there any difference on that line?
Yeah, you know, the right side of the line was a little leaky last season, and Trey Pipkins, the third, was just named the starter at right tackle. But you've got Rashawn Slater, and you've got Corey Linsley, and you've got a quarterback that gets it out quick. I don't think it's going to be a problem. His protection, that O-line last year was just fantastic compared to the year prior. So with those guys, you know, Rashawn Slater, he won all the rookie awards, and he is just so cerebral and so brilliant, and I have no worries about that O-line.
When you look back at last season, again, you talk about the defense, but there were games when they lost to teams. A lot of those teams were playoff teams. How does this team feel about being now one of those teams that teams should lose to, being one of the teams of the better teams in the AFC?
They're trying to minimize the hype. They're trying to lower the volume on all of the hype from people like you and me who are super excited. When you look at this team and just the list that came out this week, the top 100 players of 2022, the Chargers have a league high of 8. You've got Rashawn Slater, Corey Linsley, Austin Eckler, Derwin James, Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, and J.C. Jackson. And, you know, Coach Staley has told them, there's a lot of talk about you guys right now. There's a lot of hype talking about all this talent flying around the field. But you should, that should bother you. That should make you angry. You're not just given this talent, he said. This is a tough team, not a talented team. You worked hard for that talent. So that should bother you. So he's trying to spin all of the talk as to not get these guys too hyped on their own game, right? Because you've got to focus and you've got to get through this. And listen, look at week one and week two. You've got week one, you've got a great Raiders team coming to town.
Yeah.
And then you've got to turn around and go to Kansas City on Thursday. Those are two AFC West division battles that you are going to have to, if they drop those two games, they're going to be in real trouble real quick.
You mentioned J.C. Jackson. You mentioned Khalil Mack. Is there other things on the defense to either be excited about or concerned about this year?
Well, I mean, I don't think you get more excited than talking about Derwin James. Derwin James getting his deal done. He is the highest paid safety in the league. And the reason that he is the highest paid safety in the league is because he is not a safety. You can line him up anywhere. The coach saying, I don't look at him as a safety. I look at him as an impact player. Looking at him as a safety doesn't do him justice, that he's a defensive back. He can play anywhere. And he truly is the heartbeat of the defense. He can rush the quarterback as a blitzer. He can be impactful in the zone. He can be impactful in man. He can play low. He can play high. Anywhere you want. Derwin James is infectious on the sideline when it comes to enthusiasm and being a leader on this team.
Larger picture here, and this is sort of a, I know this might be a complex question, but in the city of Los Angeles, where the other team just won a Super Bowl and has a better footprint historically in that city, how have the Chargers either grown in terms of its fan base in Los Angeles? Does it still struggle with its fan base in Los Angeles? it was a real, real rocky start in the beginning, but how has it developed for 2022?
The excitement for the Chargers is unreal. I'll just tell you, there was a couple weeks ago, I believe it was the Dallas game, and I'm out there at SoFi, and I'm on the field, and, you know, every stadium has security guys, field guys, equipment guys that work all of the events at said stadium. And one of the security guys who does field security had a Charger hat on. And I said, oh, I like your hat. It was a cool hat. It was, you know, not one you see often. And they usually don't wear team insignia. It doesn't happen. They're just, you know, wearing the field stuff, right? The vests or what have you, the jackets. And I go, I like your hat. And he goes, oh, I'm so excited for this team. He goes, it's so much cooler when the Chargers are here. There's so much more energy when the Chargers are here. And the Rams had played there the night before. And so that was kind of a cool thing to hear. And it's true. Like, the energy around this team is next level. The energy at training camp has been different this year. And it just feels like when you look out into the stadium at SoFi, there are a lot of those new powder blue jerseys that just came online, right? It's different when they moved from the StubHub Center, I believe it was initially, the soccer stadium we played at when they first moved to L.A. When they moved to SoFi, the excitement and the energy just grew exponentially. And like I said, when you look around this field, you look around all the stars, it's hard not to get excited. You're seeing more of the license plate holders, the bumper stickers. You're seeing more of the flags on the cars in L.A. They're definitely getting a foothold here.
Is it possible a lot of it may have to do, I mean, I don't know, I'm just speculating here, but like, it's not, if you draft a quarterback, you're the L.A. Chargers. You are the L.A. Chargers drafting Justin Herbert. You're hiring Brandon Staley. There's free agents come in to play. It's not just somebody else's city's team with their players. You're starting to overturn the roster with your players, your city's players.
You're exactly right. I think that has a lot to do with it. The change in uniform, right? The change in personnel. I think Justin Herbert is hard not to rally behind.
Sure.
This reluctant hero. You know, he's not a showboater. He doesn't have an ego. He's not, a Baker Mayfield, for example. It's hard not to root for this kid. And everybody notices that the Chargers are the team to talk about. You know, you look at the Super Bowl contenders, 49ers came out of nowhere. The Rams came out of nowhere. The Chargers are the team this year to come out of nowhere. When you look at the deal they did with Derwin James, you look at bringing Khalil Mack over, J.C. Jackson, Bosa in a deal, Herbert with a year left on his rookie contract, they are definitely in a win-now mode. They're flying in Sony Michel as we speak to bolster that backfield. So this is definitely the time for the Chargers. It's going to be exciting. I love that the Bills are getting all the hype as the AFC leaders and to win the whole damn thing. And that's great. They can keep the hype, but the Chargers are sneaky good. And if you're playing fantasy, don't sleep on Jalen Guyton.
Yeah.
I was just looking through, highlights of Justin Herbert before we spoke from last season, and he loves Jalen Guyton. You know, there's a lot of talk about Josh Palmer, you know, moving into that wide receiver three role, and he will, behind Keenan and Mike Williams. But don't sleep on Jalen Guyton, because he is a track star and picks up those huge chunk plays.
We are so appreciative that you woke up early for us. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Good insight on the Chargers, and I hope we catch up with you again. That was fun.
Of course, man. Anytime.
You got it. Shannon Farron again, KFI 640 Chargers sideline reporter, as we continue our AFC West previews. Yeah, the excitement in her voice. There is something. Again, remember, this team went 9-8 last season. That's pretty much 500 in a 17-week season.
Now I'm ready to run through a brick wall.
Like Hondo Carpenter yesterday. You just get a new burst of energy and enthusiasm.
Here she was naming. Name of wide receivers you've never heard of. Be mindful.
Yeah,
watch out.
Exactly. Don't forget Guyton in your fantasy team. I saw that too. Somebody posted that on like Twitter or Facebook. I don't remember where I saw. I saw that too. That is as a option for your fantasy team. By the way, fantasy, I don't play because I stink at it. Nobody wants me to play with them. I want to play fantasy, and nobody's inviting me to be in their leagues. I'm all alone. All right. No, I don't usually play. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call
on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, thanks to Shannon Farron, KFI, for talking Chargers with us. So, man, just to add another team to the large list of we're going all the way AFC teams. Everybody. I like what she said about the Bills. Let them enjoy all the hype.
Yeah. but truthfully, there's a lot of hype surrounding the Chargers. She I guess maybe not as much as the Bills are getting.
Yeah.
But.
She made a good point, though. The Super Bowl is not like, it's not like college football where like, I'm going to use it liberally here. So excuse me. Like sometimes in college you build up your program and then you compete for the national championship. Like you're close. And then you're kind of in the top 10 and top five. The NFL doesn't work that way. You can come out of nowhere and win a Super Bowl. You can go to a Super Bowl.
And we've had many teams do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not like, oh, one year they'll get it. They weren't quite there, but next year they'll be better. Next year could be worse, right? That's the way this league is. And so she's made a good point. It's not like it's not going to be a eye-opening jump to go from 9-8 to winning the Super Bowl. Like, this team is capable of winning a Super Bowl. They're like any other team. They're loaded. They've got so much talent. They've got a megastar quarterback. They have got weapons around them. They've got a defense where they brought in J.C. Jackson. They've got Khalil Mack. They've got Bosa. They've got a whole bunch of things to like on the defensive side of the ball. Why not them? If you're going to talk about anybody else, like, why not the Chargers?
The only
right?
thing I wasn't too certain about, and maybe it's something new, is that there is a fever for the Chargers in the city of L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm hoping that's the case.
I'm hoping that's the case.
But I also kind of like, you know, poking fun at them like we poke fun at the Mets.
Yeah. We'll see in week one how much of that Charger enthusiasm is around when the Raiders come to town. Because even in Las Vegas, that team still has a hold on that city. All right. Hour 4 coming up next. Wake up call.